We read over your Bibles this morning, the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 6. Nehemiah is an awesome little book. I would encourage you to get familiar with Nehemiah, to read it. It's one of those books that even in the King James, it's really easy to understand the storyline of what's going on in Nehemiah. But as easy it is to read, it's difficult to preach from because it's one big story, and it's difficult to find one spot to jump in and to pick a spot and preach from. To add to that difficulty, it's not just the story in Nehemiah. The story in Nehemiah is connected to the story in Ezra, and all those are connected to Daniel. And so it's difficult to figure out exactly where on the calendar I am going to jump in Nehemiah. Nehemiah is all about the rebuilding of the walls around Jerusalem. Nehemiah is really, for the Jews, Nehemiah would be chronologically the end of the time in the Old Testament. Everything else would fall before the events of Nehemiah. And so Nehemiah, again, we kind of have to back up, and it's the culmination of some things. Again, going all the way back to the story of Daniel. You remember about Daniel. Daniel, when Jerusalem was overrun by the Babylonians, the king comes in, Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and carries away Daniel, and we know of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, took away the young, the brightest, the smartest, the strongest, and took them back to Babylon, and basically to run experiments on, for lack of a better word. And so for somewhere around 100 years, they have been in that situation. When that happened, the Babylonians also basically razed the city. They tore down the walls. They took everything of value. They just plundered the city. And so for the last time period, roughly again about 100 years, the city of Jerusalem has basically been the playground of everyone else. It's basically been the pantry. If somebody, as people began to resettle in Jerusalem, if somebody wanted something, they went to Jerusalem and took it from them. The city didn't have any walls. It didn't have an army. It didn't have any defense mechanism. And so Jerusalem was basically a playground, a pantry for all of their neighbors. Well, this went on so long that eventually Babylon was no longer the world power. Artaxerxes, who was the king of Persia, eventually came in and overtook Babylon. And so they become the big dog on the street. Many of the Jews continued to stay in that area. Simply, they had grown up there now. They had become accustomed to it. It was home. It was where their children were. It was where their grandchildren were. And so many of them stayed. But Artaxerxes did allow for many of the Jews to go back and to begin to repopulate and as much as possible rebuild the city of Jerusalem. That's really, again, what Ezra is about. Ezra is about the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. And so that's the focus of the book of Ezra. And so they began to go back, and they began to rebuild to some extent Jerusalem. But again, the more they rebuilt, many of their neighbors saw that as a threat. They didn't want Jerusalem to get too powerful. They didn't want them to get too much strength or to get too arrogant and think that they could become a power again. And so ever so often, they would go in and tear down their buildings. They would go in and take their stuff and raid the city. And so that was an ongoing problem in Jerusalem. Now, Nehemiah, who obviously this book is about and written by, Nehemiah is still back in what had been Babylon. He's still serving in the court of Artaxerxes. Nehemiah has most days a really, really good job. Nehemiah is the food taster for the king. And so most days he's getting to eat the finest food in all the land. But there's always that chance. I don't know if you ever thought about being someone's food taster, but they bring the food in and you're like, man, that looks good, but Have you made anybody mad today, King? You didn't fire the cook. You didn't give the cook. You didn't lay off the cook or anything today, did you? You're enemies. You know where they are and who they are, right? And you can see that first by now. I thought about if I was a food taster, I'd go, I don't know if that tastes right. I'll have a bite of that. Especially if it was good. I mean, it's either going to be a great meal or you'll ask me. I might as well go big. And so, Artaxerxes and Nehemiah have a pretty good relationship. And as they go along, because again, his life is literally in Nehemiah's hands, and literally Nehemiah's is in his hands. And Nehemiah's life is all in who's mad at the king, who wants to be king. And so again, over here we've got the Jews settling back in Jerusalem. We've got Nehemiah, many of the Jews still there in basically not really captivity, sort of captivity, servitude may be a better word for it. And everything seems to be hunky-dory. I'm sure that many of the Jews that had stayed behind were thinking, this is the best of both worlds. We're still here with our family, and all those that want to go back to Jerusalem, they're going back and they're reestablishing, they're building the city, and so our homeland is getting rebuilt, and everything, it just doesn't get much better than this. And so everything's going well, and just so happens some businessmen, some travelers come by. And Nehemiah says, tell me, how's the rebuilding going in Jerusalem? How's everything going there? I don't know how to answer that question. It's just not going real good. It's kind of rough up there, man. They're really having a hard time. Every time they build something, every time it gets built up, somebody comes along and kicks it over. It's kind of, it was a lot like trying to build a sandcastle at the beach. Every time they build it up, a wave would come in and wash it away. And Nehemiah's thinking, maybe they just exaggerate. Maybe they don't really know. And so some more businessmen come by and says, tell me, how are things back in Jerusalem? Boy, Nehemiah, it's not good. And after a while, enough people have told Nehemiah this that he's really disturbed by the news he's hearing from home. Now, in all likelihood, Nehemiah had never been to Jerusalem. Again, the Jews have been in this situation for about 100 years. And so, as far as we know, Nehemiah had never been to Jerusalem. But like all Jews, even today, Jerusalem is a special place for them. And so it was very important. When Nehemiah hears this, he's just distraught. And he goes in one day to taste the king, to deliver the king's food, and he gets in, and understand it was a crime punishable by death to look sad in front of the king. And so Nehemiah's trying his best to put on a good face, but obviously Nehemiah wasn't a poker player, because he failed miserably. And so he goes in, the king says to him, Nehemiah, what's wrong? What's bothering you? I can tell by looking at you that something's the matter. And Nehemiah says, King says, I don't know. It's not any of your concern. Tell me, Nehemiah, what's wrong? And so Nehemiah proceeds to tell him. He says, man, I've got news from home. And back in my hometown, and they're just, the city's being tore up, and the enemies are coming in and knocking it down, and every time they plant a garden, somebody comes in and tears down the garden. Every time they build a house, somebody knocks down their house, and they're just stealing all their stuff, and King, it just bothers me. And, Nehemiah has no idea what's going to happen, and Artaxerxes thinks about that, and he says, well, Nehemiah, I've got an idea. He said, why don't you go back to Jerusalem, and I'm going to give you some money and some stuff. I'm going to give you the resources you need, and you go back and you take care of that problem. Matter of fact, I'm going to appoint you governor over the whole area. I'm going to give you the money. I'm going to give you the resources. I'm even going to give you the authority to take care of this problem. I'm going to make you the man. And so you go back. Only catch to the whole deal was, Nehemiah, when the job's done, you have to come back here. You have to come back here. You can't stay there. You can rebuild the city. You can build it up. You can fortify it. You can do whatever you think is necessary. I'll pay for it. I'll give you the stuff. You just can't enjoy it. You need to come back to me. Come back and continue your job. Nehemiah thinks so, but he says, that's a pretty good deal. I think I can live with that. And so he gathers up the necessary stuff. And he goes back and begins to settle in. And basically, and again, this is what's difficult about preaching out of Nehemiah. I've got to tell you the whole story, and then I'm going to back up and start over. Nehemiah goes back, and he probably in all likelihood had never been to Jerusalem. And so he goes back, and he goes around, and he introduces himself. You know, "Hi, I'm Nehemiah." You know, I believe it was Ronald Reagan that said, you know, about that, you know, it's never a good thing, you know, when you open the door and somebody says, "Hi, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." That's Nehemiah's story. "Hi, I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help." But he goes around, and he introduces himself, trying to get a feel for the problem. Where should I start? Do we need to build, you know, a city hall? Do we need to build, you know, do we need to polish the temple up? Do we need to plant a garden? Do we need to get some cattle? What do we need to do? And as he goes around and talks to people, he finds out, he realizes there's no use in building anything. There's no use in doing anything. If we build buildings, if we plant a garden, if we get cattle, the only thing's going to happen is the enemies are going to come in, they're going to take it, they're going to attack. And so the first thing we need to do is we need to build the walls back around Jerusalem. We need to fortify the city so that we can defend it, so that then we can plant a garden, then we can build buildings, and an enemy just can't walk in. For a city not to have walls at that time would be much like if a nation today didn't have an army. I mean, that's about what it would amount to. And so he says, the first thing we've got to do is we've got to go and we've got to build the walls. And so he gathers up and he organizes the people. He gets his resources from Persia. Gets everything lined up, and they begin to build the walls. Now, I don't know if you've ever thought about how difficult that would be, but they begin to build the walls. And you can imagine if they get the walls built and they start progressing down here to build the wall, well, it's real simple. If I don't want you to have a wall, I come down here where you were, and I kick down your wall. Yeah, I can knock down your wall. I can attack your workers. It's a pretty healthy project to get a wall like that built. And the Bible tells us that there's this guy by the name of Sanballat. I don't know why his mama named him that. I didn't do it. I'm just reporting the news. Sanballat was the main opposition. He was kind of the one who was the ringleader of trying to prevent the wall from being built. And he did things like he went into Jerusalem and he told the people, "Listen, you can't trust Nehemiah. He's from the government. Yeah, you can't trust him. He's going to leave you." He went in. He tried to, do all kinds of things. Attack the workers, spread gossip, rumors, you name it. He did everything in his power to try to keep the wall from being built. So much so that finally at one point, Nehemiah takes his workers and he divides them up. He puts half of them building the wall and half of them guarding the wall. And so they have to split up. And so Sanballat is determined. He realizes finally that the gossip isn't going to work, the attacks isn't going to work, nothing I've done so far is working. And so he sends a message to Nehemiah. And he says to Nehemiah, he says, "Here's what I want you to do." He says, we need to get over this. There's no reason in us arguing and fighting. Why don't you come over here to this little village, and you and I, let's sit down and have a talk. Let's have negotiations. You send your Secretary of State and I'll send you. You come on over and we'll discuss this problem and see if we can't find, some middle ground. And let's come to a solution. The Bible tells us that Sanballat, his whole plan was to get Nehemiah away from Jerusalem and away from the other workers. And his plan was, as Nehemiah calls it, to do him mischief, to kill Nehemiah. "If I kill Nehemiah, the wall will stop, and then we'll go back to status quo. We'll be able to go and choose what we want to do." That brings us to the text this morning that I want us to look at. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3, when Nehemiah gets that message, and come over and spend some time. Let's talk about this situation. They were right in the middle of building the wall. They were working towards the wall. And when the message comes, somebody that says in verse 2, says, "Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono, but they thought to do me mischief." And here's Nehemiah's response. "And I sent messengers unto them saying, I am doing a great work. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come to you. I am doing a great work. Why should I leave it? As we wrap up 2015 and we head into 2016, I'm not much on resolutions. I've tried to think if in my lifetime, if I've ever made a New Year's resolution. And if I have, I don't remember it, so evidently I'm not real good at it. Okay? But I don't think I've ever made one. But I do want to challenge you with this question this morning. Not so much a resolution, but I want to ask you this question. What is your wall? What is the thing that God has for you that is so great that you can't leave it? What is the thing? Why has God allowed you to live to December the 27th, 2015? And let's be honest, many of us in here today never thought we'd live to 2015. You know, we thought 2015 was so far out into Star Wars, Star Trek era that we wouldn't make it this far. God has allowed us, you know, to get this far. You know the problem that 2000 caused. You know, many computers and VCRs wouldn't even click over to 2000. We didn't think we'd make it to 2000. Let's just be honest. Let alone 2016. But for some reason, God has allowed each of you to be here. Allowed me to still be here. And assuming we got, you know, 96 hours or so left to go. But assuming we make it the rest of the week. But we'll make it to 2016. What is the work so great that God has for you that only you can do it? That is so important, I can't take my hands off the wheels. It may be a lot of things. It could be spiritual things. It could be family things. It could be health things. It could be career things. But something that is so important that it deserves your laser focus. Nehemiah says, listen, I know there are other workers working on this wall. I know there are other people involved. But this wall is so important, I cannot leave it. Not even for a moment to come talk to you. If you want to talk to me, stand right here and talk while I build the wall. Yeah, whatever you want, but I cannot leave this task. What is that wall? It may be for you that you have a grandchild or a child that needs to know Jesus Christ. And that is your conviction. That is your wall. I cannot leave it. That is the most important thing for me in this coming year, is to know that my son, my daughter, my grandchild, they know Jesus Christ. Maybe you've got a family relationship that's splintered. And the most important thing, the wall for you that you cannot leave, is I don't want to go through 2016 and leave this undone. This is the wall that I cannot leave. It may be your business. I've got to fortify my business, get my business standing on its own and profitable, and I've got to throw myself into that. It may be your personal relationship with God. It may be evangelism. It may be your prayer life. It may be church attendance, whatever. But it is the wall that God is speaking to me about and says that this coming year, this is my wall, and I cannot leave it. I cannot leave it. I want you to see three things about Nehemiah's wall that I think we need to consider in our wall. Three things that Nehemiah teaches us about his wall. And tonight, I'm going at this backwards. It wasn't actually my plan, but tonight I'm going to go back to the first of Nehemiah. This morning, we're going to talk about Nehemiah 6 and talk about what is your wall. This morning, we're going to go back. Tonight, we're going to go back and look at an earlier part of Nehemiah and see what do you do about it. What do you do about the ruins? Well, how do you repair the ruins? How do you get back? How do you fix the wall? Now that I know what the wall is, how do I fix it? What do I do about the ruins that I see? First thing I notice about Nehemiah as well is the conviction that Nehemiah has. Look what happens here in this verse. I already told you the story. Nehemiah comes to a point in his life where some visitors, some travelers come through, and Nehemiah asks about the city. He asks about Jerusalem. And they tell him, man, Jerusalem, ask. It's tore up from the floor up. Jerusalem is in bad, bad shape. And Nehemiah is disturbed. Here's what I notice about Nehemiah as well. Nehemiah doesn't say, Archie ought to go fix Jerusalem. Nehemiah doesn't say, June ought to go fix Jerusalem. Nehemiah is burdened himself about Jerusalem. Here's the difference in a wall that we are so great, I can't leave it. It's not that, listen, my family member needs Jesus Christ, and so, Tommy, I'm praying that you'll go over and you'll do something about it. It's not that, I've got a family member, a friend, that needs to know Christ, and so I'm praying the preacher or one of the deacons will be able to get through to him. When you've got a wall that is so important, you can't leave it, it's your conviction. Nehemiah understands what his conviction is, that nobody else is going to do it. Nehemiah doesn't say, I can get down from the wall, and hey, George, you come over here, and you get up here, and you do my job while I get back. Nehemiah says, no, I cannot leave this wall. It's too important. My family is too important. I can't leave it. Yeah, it's more important than my job. It's more important than anything else. And my family is going to be that wall in 2016. All my life, I focused on my job and making money, and I felt that's what my family needed. But I realized God has spoke to me and said to me, in particular, men, he has said to me that my family is the most important thing I can work on. And 2016, it's going to be my wall. It's going to be my wall till God tells me to build another wall. I'm going to put my family first, and nothing comes ahead of my family. Maybe you're a Sunday school teacher, and God convicts you and says, you haven't been taking your job seriously as a Sunday school teacher. You've been showing up, and you've been standing there, and you've been reading what Lifeway gave you, but I want you to study, and I want you to put your heart into it, and I want you to listen to me. And so that's my role. It's going to be the most important thing I do. Yeah, it may be your job, it may be your health, whatever, but God speaks to you and gives you a conviction just as he did Nehemiah. Nehemiah, this is it. This is your conviction. What is it? And listen, here's the sad thing. I can't tell you what it is. The deacons can't tell you what it is. The nominating committee can't tell you what it is. The finance committee can't tell you what it is. The Southern Baptist Convention can't tell you what it is. You've got to figure out what is your conviction. What is it? One of the curious things that we read about in Nehemiah is how little we see God in Nehemiah. We don't see, some of us are sitting back thinking, if God would just skylight in great big fiery letters what he wants me to do. We don't read where God spoke to Nehemiah. We don't read where Nehemiah had a dream, or Nehemiah had a vision, or Nehemiah saw a sign. Nehemiah heard a problem, and he knew he was the man to fix it. I saw this just this week. I've used this before. I was walking out of a store, and I saw it while I was in the register, and I saw that over at the door, the doormat was flipped over. I watched several people stumble over it. I watched several people step over it. I saw several people look down at it. But every one of them kept walking. Every one of them kept walking. Every one of them walked by that mat. Somebody needs to fix that mat. So when I walked out, I stopped and kicked the mat over. I thought the lady behind me was going to run me over with a buggy. I'm like, what are you doing? Get on right away. No. It bothered me, so I fixed it. Listen, we see things that bother us. Listen, I've seen it right here. I've seen people walk in and it'd be a piece of trash or a leaf, and heaven knows it's a leaf most of the time. This time of year, leaf in the floor, somebody loses it. Somebody needs to get them up. You're right. Somebody does. Jump on it. Listen, Nehemiah saw a problem, was convicted by the problem, and it was a problem, it was a situation where Nehemiah said, I can't take my hands off of it. I can't take my hands off of it. Can I tell you something? As I look at the church in America today, I'm having a hard time deciphering what our wall is. I'm having a hard time, and I'm not talking about this church, I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about all of them. I'm having a hard time figuring out what our wall is. I'm not sure we've got one. It's obviously not lost souls. It's obviously not lost people. It's obviously not church attendance. It's obviously not Bible study. It's obviously not prayer. Hey, I'm just telling you. Yeah, Nehemiah says the wall is so important, I can't leave it. Obviously, those are things that the church has decided are not important enough, we can leave them. You want me to get real ugly? Yeah, let me finish out the year with a bang. Let me tell you, if I was picking a wall for the church in America today, if I was picking a wall for the church as a whole, I'd say it was Eaton. Some of you are looking at me confused. You want me to prove it to you? 4 weeks ago, we had a Thanksgiving dinner here on Sunday evening. Some of you are going to get mad. I don't care. You know, I'm too big to hide and too tired to run. Yeah. Archie's got my back. Yeah. And Archie may look a little, but he's wound tight. A month ago, we had a Thanksgiving dinner. Gymnasium full. Tonight, we're going to have church. Do I need to go on? Lost souls. We're going to be thrilled to death if all the churches in Cabarrus County, out of how many people's in Cabarrus County? Actually, my mind just went blank. It's a little over 200,000, right? About a quarter of a million. About a quarter million, isn't it? About a quarter of a million. Over 70% of them lost. Do the math. About 170,000 of them are lost somewhere in that neighborhood. And we're going to be thrilled if we're able to see 1,600 people baptized. Not even a percentage. Not only are we going to be thrilled if we see a percentage, 1%, that's going to be double what we did last year. Hold us back. Let's just go. It's obviously not Bible study and prayer again. Announce you're having prayer meeting. Announce you're having Bible study. And watch what happens. It's obviously not lost people. Announce we're going out into the streets and we're going out and knocking doors and watch what happens. What is our role? What is our role as individuals? What is our role as a church? What is the thing that we say we cannot leave? It's our traditions. Oh, God help us if we try to move the pulpit or paint a wall or something. God help us if we use a different translation of the Bible or sing out of a different book. I've been here almost 21 years. I don't think I can make you any madder than you already are. Listen, what is our role? It's our traditions. It's the way we've always done it. Oh, we can't leave that behind. We got to do it this way. All the people around us are dying and going to hell. And our wall goes unbuilt. What is our wall? What is our wall? What is the Church of America's wall? What is my wall? What is your wall? What is our conviction? Now, understand, that won't be easy. I'm just going to touch on this. I've already said not only we have to see the conviction, but the challenges. Oh, it's not easy. Let me tell you what's going to happen. You know the story I told you. Nehemiah begins to build the wall, and Sanballat comes and kicks it down. Yeah, Sanballat comes and spreads rumors. They come and do everything they can. They try to kill him to keep the wall from being built. Let me tell you what's going to happen when you figure out your wall. Somebody's going to try to keep you from building that wall. Guarantee it. If you say my wall, man, the thing I've got to concentrate on, I've got to concentrate, and it doesn't have to be spiritual. I'm going to concentrate on my health. I've got to zero in on my health, because if I don't stay healthy, then you know, I can say my children are my wall, but if I don't take care of myself, then I'm not going to. So I got to I got to take care of my health. You know what's the first thing going to happen? Somebody's going to bring you a cake. Yeah. You know what's going to happen? No matter what, and here's the bad thing about it. Most of the time, the person that tries to keep you from building the wall is the person you love the most. It'll probably be a family member. You decide, I gotta find a new career. Yeah, everybody's gonna get in the way. Everybody's gonna try to hold you up. Yeah, there's gonna be all kinds of challenges. Don't think I'm simply saying, oh, decide what your wall is, decide what's most important to you, and go do it. I'm not foolish. I'm not as old as some of you, but I'm not that young that I'm that dumb either. I understand that when you say, this is the wall. This is the thing I cannot leave. This is the thing that God has put in front of me, and it's my task. Nobody is going to be the husband of my wife but me. Nobody is going to be the witness in my workplace but me. Nobody is going to take care of my health but me. Nobody is going to take care of my career. Whatever it is. I promise you this. Everybody won't stand up and go, yeah, yay for you. There'll be challenges. There'll be battles. Internal and external. Nehemiah had them. Everybody's had them. Moses had them. They all have them. It's a battle. But notice what we see with Nehemiah. I come back to that statement. Underline it. Mark it. One of the words that comes over and over in the book of Nehemiah is the word so. So. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's 32 times in the King James Version. So. And if you read them, it's like, many of them are like this. Sanballat did so and so. Sanballat did this. So I built a wall. Yeah, they came against me. So I did this. They did it. So Nehemiah, that way, you know, I don't know what you did. So I did this. You know, you ever made one of those statements? He threw a biscuit at me, so I threw jelly at him. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, I'm still hung up on that water gun that shoots jelly. Yeah, that so. He did this, so I did this. Nehemiah, we see his commitment in this story. Nehemiah says that there is nothing that matters. There is nothing. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Notice something. Very important. Very important you'll notice in this statement. Nehemiah says, I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. I find it really interesting that Nehemiah doesn't say, I'm doing a great work, I will not come down. You know the difference in will not and cannot. Right? I will not come down, and I cannot come down. I will not is kind of a personal choice. Yeah. I will not come down, but I might come down in a little bit. I will not come down right now. I cannot come down. Listen, Nehemiah is saying this is beyond a choice. This is beyond anything. This is the driving factor in my life. It is a fire that burns within me. I cannot stop. I cannot quit. Not I will not, but I cannot. Huge difference. Nehemiah says, I am committed to the task. I cannot stop. And in 52 days, the wall was complete. I cannot leave the wall. I cannot leave the wall. What is it that you are so convicted by? That you say, I cannot leave the wall. Say, I will not, you can be bought. A while back it came out in the paper that across the lake from us, and they never had built any of them, they were going to start building some million-dollar houses. And I said something to my mom about, I hope they want our side of the lake. And she says, well, mine's not for sale. And I said, you get new neighbors. don't know that anybody will, but I can tell you that if some nut comes along with a big enough checkbook, he's going to own it all. Everything. Everything. I will walk up the street naked. I'm telling you, y'all think that y'all see me on the front page of the paper. Headlines will say this, rich man walks up street naked. I guarantee you that's a whole different headline than boatman walks up street naked. Boatman went to jail for walking up street naked. Rich man just walks up the street naked. I'm telling you, the dogs, the clothes, the cars, you name it. If he's got the money, have at it. Take care of my mother. She lives right over there and that nut ain't selling. I'm gone. Will not? No. Will. Can be talked into it. Cannot is a different thing. What is it that God is impressing on you, speaking to you, dealing with you? Maybe it's a habit. Alcohol, drugs, porn, whatever. And God's saying to you, you know what? In 2016, you got to do something about that habit. You got to do something. You got to break it. You got to decide, I'm on this wall and I cannot leave it. This is too important. This is too important to my health, to my spirituality, to my family. I cannot. When this year ends, I'm going to be free of this habit. I cannot. I cannot. Maybe it's a habit. You need to decide. I'm doing a great work here, and I cannot come down. Maybe it's debt. I'm going to get out of debt. Maybe it's your financial house. Maybe it's tithing. Maybe it's job related. I got to have a new job. I don't know if you've ever had one of them jobs where your job affects your spirituality. You ever had one of them? You know, some jobs will make you closer to God. Some jobs will make you further from Him. You know, and you know, for different reasons. I got to have a new job. I'm not just going to sit back. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to apply. I'm going to knock on some doors. I hear people over there talking about, I need a job. Where have you applied? Nowhere. Then you're not up on the wall. Get on the wall. Maybe it's your family. My family's busted up. I had somebody tell me just this week that they had a son that they haven't spoken to or seen in over a year and lives in the very same town. Good Christian man. Brokenhearted. We stood right out here in this parking lot. I acted like Larry. I stood out here in the parking lot and I prayed with him right in the parking lot. But I'm not going to rest till that's fixed. That's the most important thing. Maybe it's your relationship with your wife. See, understand this, that all those things, are you wise enough this morning to understand that if you're in a job that stinks and it's affecting, it'll ultimately affect your relationship with God? If your marriage is on the rocks, it'll affect your relationship. If your relationship with your children's on the rocks, if your health is on the rocks, My health is going to be, I'm going to get on that wall and I'm not going to come down, because I understand that if I'm not healthy, if I'm not alive, I can't have an influence on those grandchildren. You say the grandchildren are most important. Well, then there's some other things have to happen. What is that wall? What is that thing that God has shown you and speaking to you right now that I cannot come down? I cannot leave behind. I am doing a great work. Maybe it's your job, maybe it's your business, your family, your health, your church work. It could be anything. But it's the thing. I mean, let's be honest. Walls are not real spiritual. You read through the Bible, and there are a lot more spiritual stories than Nehemiah's. Nehemiah built a wall. That's not real spiritual. But I want to point out something to you in that vein. Read the whole book of Nehemiah, and you'll find out that not once in Nehemiah is there a miracle. There is no miracle. There is no mighty move of God in the entire book of Nehemiah. It's not there. When Nehemiah goes in before Artaxerxes and he's looking sad, God didn't boom down from heaven, "Let my people go." Now, that was Moses. He didn't write on the wall with a finger. No, that was Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah, he didn't. Nehemiah just said, "I'm doing a great work." He didn't strike Sanballat and his friends blind so they couldn't find Nehemiah and cause problems. No, Nehemiah just stayed on the wall. There are no miracles in the entire book of Nehemiah. Nowhere do we see God just, poof, there's a wall. You know, they didn't get up one morning and, poof, you know, a wall around the city and make a prison, Lord, you know, and go on. No, no miracles. One man with a conviction and a commitment who overcame the challenges and said, "I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down." What is your wall? What is the thing that you're being challenged? What is the problem you see? What is the thing in your life that needs your laser attention in this coming year? I'm not asking you to make a resolution because I know they stink. You're just like me. If I've ever made one, I don't even remember making it. I'm asking you to make a commitment before God and say, I'm not coming down off this wall. Till this wall is built, I will not come down. I want to ask you to bow your heads. While every head is bowed, no one's looking around, it's just you. This isn't about your spouse. This isn't about your children. This isn't about me. This is about you and your challenge before God. God has shown you someone. He has shown you something. He has shown you some problem. And He said, "There's your wall. Go build it. There's your wall. Commit yourself to it. There's your great work. Get started." This morning you want to come and kneel at this altar and say, "Lord, with your help, I want to commit to the wall. I'm going to do what you're calling me to do. I see the problem. I'm going to quit saying somebody needs to do it. Somebody needs to fix it. And I'm going to climb up on that wall. And I'm going to stay till the job is complete." My family deserves it. My health, my job, my church. This is my wall. One man, convicted, who overcame the challenges and made a commitment. An old statement that says, "This world has not seen what God could do with one man totally, completely sold out to Him." I cannot leave the wall as we stand together. It's a great work, and I got to commit to it. Nobody else can do it. Nobody else will do it. Nobody else should do it. It's all on me, Lord.
Only trust Him. Only trust Him. Only trust Him.